WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbite. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 13th of April, Anno Domini 2008, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, things you can lose. We have a special guest with us in the studio today. You can see at least one of them listed on our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Larry Dugan, who is the director of online learning for Finger Lakes Community College.
Good morning.
Good morning, Larry. And with him is Robert, who apparently has no last name, who is one of his minions. I guess he's just going to do whatever he's doing. The reason we have Larry here, other than the fact that he's been pestering me for years to get on the show, is he is the director of online distance learning environments for all of New York State.
I'm actually the chairman of the directors of online and distance learning environments. Yeah, that's it. You said it right.
That was pretty damn close. Pretty good. Close enough for government work, nice anyway. Job. Which you're doing. So,
yes.
<Yeah. laughs> And he is the man who is in charge of all, however many is it now, 1,500? 35,000 islands in Second Life. How many?
I work on seven islands in Second Life.
Oh, only seven?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Piker, get him off the show. he runs seven islands for various bits and pieces of New York State, the SUNY system, I guess.
SUNY system's out there, yep.
In Second Life. And a couple of weeks ago, we had Wagner James Au, who's an author, writer, and a blogger, and a reporter in Second Life. And now we have Larry, and Larry has been kind enough to offer the Soundbites folks a bit of an island, which Robert is going to build beautiful things on for us.
We've already given our dream list, and he started sitting there going, oh, when did I get myself into that?
First, he tried to explain to us that we really don't have enough island to put an entire racetrack, but okay.
Rob's couch
can
be in there.
Rob's couch will be in there. I need a room for a hammock. That's what I need. But Robert's going to build it. Larry has been kind enough to let us use the land for a while, and I'm honored and delighted to invite both of them to be on the show with us today. So if you've got Second Life questions, these indeed are the people to call. And, of course, you know the numbers. If you're in the 585 area code, it's 222-1180. If you're outside the 585 area code, it's 800-295-1180. That's 800-295-1180. And if you're a Verizon Wireless customer, it's a free call. It's star 1180. Of course, who doesn't get a free call on Sundays anyway? All right, never mind.
Really?
Let's start with some news. On Tuesday, Microsoft lifted the lid on 14,000 pages of fairly sketchy versions of tech documentation for core software code. On show for the first time in public are underlying protocols for Office 2007, Office SharePoint Server 2007, and Exchange Server 2007, all of which, as you may have realized, are entirely obsolete since the 2008 versions are out. This is Microsoft's latest semi-pathetic effort to satisfy the antitrust concerns of the European Union, which is possibly a tougher adversary for the company than Google, and certainly a tougher adversary than the United States. In February, the firm made a surprise announcement in which it agreed to publish and provide free access to application programming interfaces, or as we call them, APIs, for its, because we believe in initialisms here, for its major software products. At the time, Microsoft said it also planned to free up protocols around its client and server software. Now it has unleashed preliminary tech docs to reveal some of the inner workings of its code via its Microsoft Developers Network website. This is the first stage of that process. There will be three phases. It's going to start by garnering feedback from the development community. Then it'll publish the final versions of technical documentation along with definitive patent licensing terms. The definitions will be crucial to third parties who want to play with Microsoft code. We shall find out soon enough if Redmond will let them play ball. So the real reason they're doing this, of course, is the antitrust concerns. In January, the European regulators began two formal investigations against Microsoft for alleged market abuse. They alleged Redmond had refused to disclose interoperability information on a range of Microsoft products. And the second investigation was initiated by the Norwegian, by complaints from the Norwegian web browser company Opera, which alleged that the tying of Internet Explorer to its Windows operating system was anti-competitive. We've only heard that song about 50 times over the last 30 years, but we'll see what the story is. We'll follow that as we go along. Let us now bow our head. No, wait. Let us now go to the phones. Oh, see, if you move the brightness up, you get a much better picture. We're going to start with Jeff in Fairport, New York. Welcome, Jeff. What's your question?
Hi, yes. My question is that I have a son who wants to access Team Second Life. I want to know what Larry Dugan's thoughts on that was.
Larry?
Team Second Life.
Team Second Life.
One of the hottest things out there right now. Team Second Life.
Tell you what, you got to mute the mic.
Is that better?
Hold on one minute. Okay. Jeff, you would, please turn off your radio.
Yeah.
That makes for a very confusing radio. You know, if you want
to.
Or
we'll have to cut you off and we won't hear if you have any follow up questions.
So, and I'm easily confused.
No, go ahead, Larry.
Team Second Life. Right now, there are two areas of Second Life. The main grid they refer to, which is open to adults 18 plus, and the 13 to 17 year old teen grid. They're protecting that area. In fact, if you want to get into the teen grid, you have to go through an FBI search. So the teen grid is a pretty relatively safe place. I wouldn't say anything is absolutely safe because it's still the internet. If you want to get involved in Teen Second Life, there's a lot of schools out there actually that are doing a lot of stuff in Teen Second Life. And to get involved in it, you just go to secondlife.com and sign up, and they'll ask you what age you are, and you put it in.
Oh, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
That's my question. Thank you.
It's an interesting. Thing they've done, and I'm very impressed by it. You know, there are places in Second Life that are listed as mature.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you are mature, you can make the decision as to whether to go there or not. But teens, they seem mature, and it's like, I have to click. I have to click. So it's nice that Teen Second Life, I'm assuming, polices some of that stuff.
Absolutely.
Simply doesn't allow it.
And on the cover of the teen.secondlife.com page is a scantily clad singer.
Well, yeah, but then,
who's a teenager?
I'm the father of a teenager, and believe me when I tell you, if you expect them to be cloistered, you need to get them into a monastery.
My son is 9, my stepdaughter is 23, 24 now, so I've got this range in the middle where I'm not quite sure what to expect yet.
Yeah. I tried to get my daughter into the Carmelites, but they apparently will not take them when they're 3. That's a true story. All right. I did it because I wanted to be able to say that was a true story. All right. Our next caller is Betsy in Pittsburgh, New York. Welcome, Betsy. What's your question?
Yes. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to ask your opinion on a free software product, whether you would recommend it or not, called McAfee Site Advisor.
I've played around with it a little bit, but, you know, it's just like anything else. You're going to have to do due diligence in keeping it updated because, you know, they can only go with what is currently available, you know, and they're kind of, it's a game of leapfrog.
And most of the new viruses that come out, the virus authors don't release it until it can get past McAfee and Norton.
Yeah.
The two big programs.
The Site Advisor, you know, they're finding different ways to, instead of showing it, being dropped from the list is, yes, this site is okay.
Well, we should tell people what the McAfee Site Advisor actually is. It's a plug-in for your browser. When you go to a specific site, it pops up and says, you know, this is safe, this is not safe, there's spyware on here, there's viruses on here, this is probably a scam.
Looks like it currently only works with Firefox.
Right now, I think
it does. Or Windows. They don't have a Firefox for Mac yet.
Right. It looks like a pretty neat product, but as these guys have been saying, it's a leapfrog. You know, they're never going to keep up. Certainly for the places that are out there and have been out there, certainly for the viruses that have been out there for a while, this can be very, very helpful. I'm not saying you shouldn't run it. What I am saying is you shouldn't rely on it solely.
Okay. But it is better than Explorer 7.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, a sharp stick in the eye is better than Explorer 7, but that's just me.
Okay.
All right.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And then that goes back to something we've been saying for a long time. You know, put the computer in the living room. Don't let the kid have a computer hidden in their bedroom
exactly.
where they do who knows what.
Because then they don't, Johnny or little Mary won't be, you know, talking to some predator and then wind up. And I had a friend do this. Literally, they didn't know what was going on with their daughter. And she wound up taking off and going to the state of Washington with this guy and wound up, you know, well, she is of age, but turned around and got married. But didn't know the guy. Literally, boom, off because of the online chat and all that crap.
Yeah, it's that the misconception of familiarity, which is pretty tough to say. You chat with someone for weeks or months on the internet, and you think you know them, and you know absolutely nothing about them.
Exactly.
Right. Right. All right. Our next caller is Ben from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Ben. What's your question?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen, and especially to Chris Reich. He and I invented the pinhole camera together.
Very nice.
I got a question.
You were the guys who invented it.
How you doing, Ben?
I'm good. Hey, Chris, I got my Brownie Hawkeye to work with my XT that I bought from Tom Arduini. Anyway, I have a question.
We'll see you on iChat.
Yeah. I have a Mac G4 10.3.9. What can I put a webcam on that? I mean, I was reading some blogs or something on Apple.com, and there's some spinoff stuff, and they're saying some inexpensive webcams will work even though they're not slated to work with the Mac.
Yeah, there are some Mac specific webcams. We sell one from Mac Alley and one from iFire. There's a USB one for $30 that's cheap and okay, and then there's a FireWire one for $130, which is better quality. So it sort of some depends on what you're looking for in a webcam. But there are some third party cameras, Kensington, Logitech, you know, most of the standard camera makers. Some of them work with a Mac. They don't advertise it that well as having Mac drivers. Some of them work okay with the Mac. I'm trying to find the name of the software. There's a program called iChat USB, I think was the name of the program, that allows generic USB web cameras to work with the Macintosh. So you can get a PC-based USB web camera, and it will work with your Mac using this third-party driver. So the hardware is all generic. It's the driver is the big key.
I see. And you sell that? I want to talk to my uncle in Winnipeg, and I don't know. He wants to. The iChat is.
Well, iChat is Apple's instant messaging software for text, audio, and video chat.
Oh, you can't.
And it works.
It
works with AOL Instant Messenger, so you can do Mac to Mac or Mac to Windows.
Can you use it with like Yahoo IM?
I don't believe Yahoo IM supports video on the Mac.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But you can use iChat, you can use Jabber, you can use Adium, you can use Skype.
So, do you have to pay for these, like iChat?
No, the software is all free.
Oh, you just go.
In fact, all of the ones that Steve mentioned are free.
Right.
And the use of them are free. You don't have to pay anybody for the service.
Okay.
Well, with Skype, if you call a real phone number...
Yeah, we're talking video.
Right.
We're talking
Skype,
video, so that'd be computer
is free.
Right, yes. With Skype, computer to computer is free. Computer to phone or phone to computer you pay for.
I see. Wow. Thank you very much.
Yep.
And I think we all should keep inventing things.
Yeah.
I think that's
Apple
a
used
lovely
to,
idea.
Apple used to sell
the noble
their own...
tradition.
Yep. Apple used to sell their own camera, the iSight. And when they started building cameras into all the Macs, they stopped selling it themselves. So now you got to go to third-party companies for your older Macs. Or Apple would like you to buy a new Mac that has a camera built in.
Exactly. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Robert, no last name, Larry Duke, and Chris Reich. Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. It's 21 minutes after the hour. Back with Soundbites on 1180 WHAF. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
Larry Duke.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we have Robert, who has not only no last name, which apparently is Kale, he's trying to tell us now. Liar. But he also doesn't want to get on the air. It's 25 minutes after the hour, and we our sound bites. Tuesday was a big day for Microsoft. Not only did they release some documentation, and it was the day of Microsoft's monthly visitor, but they also finally let out a Windows Vista Service Pack 1, SP1, prerequisite update. It's an update for the update that had been originally put on ice following complaints that it threw some computers into endless reboot cycles. In February, the company was forced to suspend automatic distribution of its servicing stack update, or SSU, for a certain update ahead of its planned manual release of Vista Service Pack 1 for some, but significantly not all, customers. Now the software giant insists the problem has been fixed. How? Well, it's gifted us with a pre-S1 update, of course. According to Microsoft's product team blog, and I quote, the SSU has special code to check whether there are any pending reboots or other updates to install. If it sees either of these circumstances, it prevents the install from starting. During our investigation, we discovered that there were a few unknown and rare events during the middle of the installation of the update that could cause the update to think it needed a reboot to complete the installation. If this happened, the system entered a repeating reboot loop. You'd reboot, you'd reboot, you'd reboot. It would tell you how to reboot again, tell you how to reboot again, tell you how to reboot again. So to address this problem for people
isn't
who...
Isn't that normal for Windows?
who have not already installed the SSU, we are releasing a fix tomorrow which will install prior to the PS1 servicing stack update. This pre-SSU update helps to ensure a smooth install of the SSU by working to prevent the system from rebooting during the Service Pack 1 SSU installation. This makes me almost... It gives me almost as big a headache as time travel stories where people go back and kill their great-grandfathers. As near as I can figure, Microsoft is basically having customers install a prerequisite Service Pack 1 update, which solves the mysterious reboot bug. The company has also reiterated it remains on track to pump out the Service Pack to millions of customers worldwide. Let me just put it this way. The automatic distribution will be for English, French, German, Japanese, and Spanish languages only at first. So if you're not using one of those, who cares? And it will happen in waves because there are simply, and I quote, too many Windows users, so not everyone will get it on the same day, unquote. There has been a manual version of the service pack for some very large customers. Crucially, however, Microsoft hasn't written in blood an actual date when the automatic Service Pack 1 update will be released. The clock is ticking. Mid-April, when they promised it to us, is but a week away.
My head is spinning. Are you saying that this is a prerequisite for putting in the Service Pack 1?
Yes. You can't install Service Pack 1 until you have installed this prerequisite.
But Service Pack 1 has been out for how long?
It has not been officially released, although anybody could download it and install it themselves for the last month.
Neither has Vista.
Okay. If I hadn't already sworn off Windows, I would today.
It is a tad convoluted, and I'm sure the people at Microsoft know what's best for us. And I, for one, greet our
and I got
software
some swamp land
overlords.
For you, too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, our next caller. Don't forget, we have Larry Dugan here, who is an expert in Second Life. Are you in Second Life at this moment?
I am.
How exciting for you. And is anybody else in there with you?
Absolutely not, no.
I don't know that our crew does Second Life. They had trouble getting onto IRC, so I'm not sure that
that's
going to be popular for them.
Well, some of them even been criticizing, why our interest in Second Life.
I mean, are they dragging out that hoary old joke, I'm still trying to get a First Life?
No, not yet.
You should have said that,
because they'll bring that out, too. But, I mean, this is just another avenue for us to explore with Soundbite.
Yeah, I'm actually very excited at the things we can do in Second Life that you can't do out in the real world.
RIC chat. I mean, this we could set up at other times and that type of stuff.
Well, there's a bunch of things that we can do.
It's a little more fun, a different aspect on it than just sitting there typing, just seeing text on the screen.
All right, our next caller is Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Hi. Good morning. I've seen to have picked up a virus, the Trojan Kill AV virus. And I've got Norton Internet Security, and it's found it, but it can't seem to get rid of it. Yeah. I've also got something that's just messing with both Internet Explorer and Firefox. It it supplements ads on websites with other ads, and it's just killing me.
Yeah. So what you need to do is dance the Security Tango at securitytango.com.
Well, what I already did was I reinstalled, I reformatted the drive.
Yeah, that's not going to do it. You reformatted the drive?
Yeah, and I reinstalled my system, so now I'm starting from scratch, but I'm pretty dissatisfied with Internet security, and I was wondering what you thought about the Knob 32 suite of products.
Well, here's the deal.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before. There is a group of people who are calling themselves the Russian Businessmen's Network, and they are paid to put out Trojans and stuff in order to take over machines. Rumor has it, and no one's been able to verify this, but rumor has it they will not release a product until it can beat all of the big three, McAfee, Norton, and Trend Micro, in terms of their antivirus software.
And Computer Associates.
Computer Associates.
Especially now since Roadrunner and Time Warner and a lot of other ISPs are bundling Computer Associates with their software.
Right. Yep. So we often recommend a lesser-known product. I've not tried the Knob software. Personally, on the Security Tango page, we talk about AVG and Avast. AVG is at grisoft.com, G-R-I-S-O-F-T, and Avast is at avast.com. I actually kind of like Avast better because it's cooler.
Their virus database has been updated.
But the first line of defense is your behavior. Don't open email attachments. Don't click on links in email. Be really, really sure what websites you're typing. Type the address yourself. Don't click on a link. And most of the viruses and
don't
spyware,
use Internet Explorer.
Right,
don't
Internet
use
Explorer,
Outlook
right.
Express.
Almost
the preview pane.
The bottom line is don't use Windows.
Now buy a Mac.
I wasn't going that far.
The Avast program, does that also include the equivalent of the Adaware and SpyBot, or is it?
Well, you should use Adaware and SpyBot separately, although Avast does have a lot of stuff.
Okay, I'll give it a try.
Yeah, because like I say, the surest way to slow down your machine is just to put that Norton security back on. And that will drag it to its knees. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have taken
absolutely.
So many machines and taken Norton either 2007, 6, 7, and 8 off, and it's unbelievable the vast improvement in performance on those machines.
So as soon as I put it on, I noticed that many more processes are started and it slowed everything up, so I can't go back there.
Yep. Well, that's so one of the unfortunate truths is that you have to have all those things running to try to keep yourself safer. But it's at a effect of your computer. Right. Thank you. At the cost of performance on your computer.
Sure. All right. Well, I'll check out the Security Tango and try your suggestion.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
It continues to be difficult.
It's a challenge.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Well, and the Mac people are starting to see viruses now. Linux people are starting to see viruses. It's important to, as Steve said, your behavior is what really
Microsoft
determines.
Created one called Vista.
Yeah. Well, as Steve said, it's your behavior on the Internet that determines how safe you're going to be. It's just
if you walk down dark alleys with $20 bills hanging out of your pocket, you'll probably get mugged.
Exactly. whereas if you stay in the light and tuck them into your pockets, you'll be safer. So it is important to be careful. One of the big things that we continue to harp on is turning off the preview pane in your email. When you click on an email, you know how you see it in the bottom half of the screen? That's called the preview pane. If you can see it, you've opened it. And if you've opened it and there's something in there that wants to attack your machine, it has done so. So if
even
you've
if
got
you
the
just
preview
click
pane,
on it to hit delete.
Exactly. Yep. If you click on it to hit delete, you've opened it already if the preview pane is working. So in every version of every single email program I know of, you can turn off the preview pane. Make sure you do that so that if you find something you don't want, you can click on it, hit the delete key, and it's gone without activating. Now, I have to admit that means it's now you have to double-click on something to read it. Ooh. It's a small price to pay for being safe.
One of the things I do is I turn off my preview pane, delete the obvious junk, delete the obvious spam, delete the obvious phishing.
And it's now time for lunch.
Then turn my preview pane back on and read the messages I want.
Oh, that's interesting, except
it takes longer, and it's still not quite as secure.
Right, it's not quite as secure.
Leaving them off completely.
Leave it off. It's easier.
Yeah.
We're never going to be completely secure. Everything is a risk.
Right. But at least you can mitigate that risk.
Exactly. That's what Steve is doing.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we'll have all this stuff in our little space in Second Life. Rob's sitting there thinking, the building's not going to be that big. Really, it's not going to be as large as you think it is. So far, we're up to
he's laughing now.
He's
laughing now. Wait till we start building. He'll be sitting there. He'll become a rant.
And now it's cousin Robert's rant.
Yeah,
exactly. All right, our next caller is Ray from Greece, New York. Welcome, Ray. What's your question?
Wow, you brought up a couple for me here. My primary problem right now is I'm getting this ending program back, and a bunch of blue bars come under it, and it freezes it.
Is this when you try to stop your machine?
Sometimes when I try to get into the internet, it just happens occasionally, and more so frequently. And I do have, and I just heard you say about Outlook.
Yep.
What can I replace that with?
Well, for email, we recommend Thunderbird. For web browsing, we recommend Firefox. Both of those are available from the Mozilla Corporation at mozilla.com. So you can go to mozilla.com and get both Firefox and Thunderbird. Firefox is listed in big letters in the graphic, but also Thunderbird has a link there as well.
That's great.
And when you install Thunderbird, read every screen carefully, because one of them will say, would you like to import your email and settings from Outlook? And you say yes. And then all your email comes over, all your settings come over, and you're done.
I see. And will my Outlook automatically go away?
Well, you can then...
Short answer, no.
No, yeah. Outlook never goes away. It's part of the operating system and
can't
go away.
This is a momentous occasion.
But you don't have to run it.
Steve just gave a short answer.
Oh, mother pearl.
This is unprecedented.
I thought he was clearing his throat. It was an actual answer. Wow. All right. The deal is that it doesn't go away, but you don't have to run it.
Oh, okay.
Okie doke?
Will that help me with this problem I'm having?
Well, it won't solve that problem. For that problem, before you install Firefox and Thunderbird, suggest you dance the Security Tango. Again, it's at securitytango.com, and that'll clean your machine up, and then you can install Thunderbird and Firefox for a safer internet experience. And we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Robert Kale, Larry Dugan, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbite, 1180 WHAS.
Oh, drat these computers. They're so naughty and so complex. I could pinch them.
Here they make me so angry. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Larry Dugan.
I'm worried about
I'm Chris Reich.
Where did that voice come from?
And I'm Rob Linton.
It's Marvin the Martian.
No, that's the best you've done it in a long time.
Thank you. It is 43 minutes after the hour. We're soundbite. One of the things I regret nothing in my life except for the fact that I don't have the talent to do that sort of mimicry. I wish I did.
No, you've been doing that for years.
Yeah, not nearly that well, yeah.
But no, you're getting a lot better at it.
Thank you.
That's scary.
Practice does make perfect.
Yeah, I do.
Or at least better off, anyway. All right. Yahoo, as you may know, Microsoft has been wooing Yahoo. Well, actually, they offered to buy Yahoo outright, and they don't care if it's a friendly buyout or not. So Yahoo's board members met on Friday. According to a report in the Wall Street Journal, the outcome can be summed up in one word: undecided. Yahoo's board is debating whether or not to take Microsoft up on their unsolicited buyout offer, which potentially could later include News Corp, or whether or not they should team up with Time Warner's AOL and possibly Google. I'd love to see Yahoo and Google together. Yeah, Google. Yahoo has been looking to resolve the path it's going to choose, given that it faces a deadline within the next 2 weeks to do a deal with Microsoft or face a potential proxy fight exchange offer and possibly a lower bid from Redmond. According to the Times report, Yahoo's management is expected to schedule meetings with both Microsoft and Time Warner for next week. And that is the most I have said the word Yahoo on this show in 2 years, which shows you how relevant Yahoo has become.
The heck with that news. I need to know something else.
Uh-oh, here we go.
The weather's turning nice.
Yeah?
And your daughter has her permit.
Okay, moving right along now. She doesn't yet.
She doesn't?
It's not something to discuss on the air, but she doesn't yet.
Ooh.
She will very soon, very, very soon. But not just yet.
No, I'm just wondering whether we're going to see any more gray hairs.
Well, I'll let you all know when to get the hell off the roads because, Larry's got kids who are driving.
The reason I say is because I just got the motorcycle home.
Oh, no, you want to leave that? No, can you encase it in some sort of foam? Because you're going to need that.
Oh.
Right. Because she'll go up the driveway, through the garage, and into the mic.
I'll stay clear of your house then.
Yeah, that would be best,
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You've got, you're teaching one
yeah,
now?
Yeah, avoid Fairport.
Yes,
just avoid Fairport, bottom line.
See, okay, I'll stay with Mary.
Okay,
we should just have the bike worked on.
We should have people call in and tell us what areas of the city to avoid. Eventually, we'll have like 3 blocks in the 19th Ward we can drive in, then we're done.
I can drive around my block?
If you stay in the backyard, yes.
I only have a backyard. Oh, wait a minute, I just got the parking lot.
There you go, you can drive around in your parking lot is where you can go. Boom, boom. It's like having a big wheel, only you get to waste gas while you're doing it.
Yeah.
All right, our next caller is, and don't forget, we've still got a Second Life expert here. If you've got any questions about Second Life, why are you not calling in? Our next caller is Jerry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jerry. What's your question?
Hi. I changed carriers. I have dial-up, and I changed carriers. And since then, all it does is blow me out, and other problems occurring out of the Internet. I don't use it that much at home, okay? But they've told me to do all these things, and bottom line was to download a new modem driver. But when I go there to download it from Intel, it's an Intel, mm-hmm. I have a Dell computer, XP Home version.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go there to download it, it doesn't happen. You click it, it comes up. You know, you see that little thing at the bottom where it's trying to get it, the little green bar progresses.
Yep.
And, nothing happened. So then they told me, go to the Dell people. I go to them. You can't communicate with them unless you call up or you're registered with them and have an account. Okay.
Right.
So when I get into Dell, though, to try and download it on my own, I'm getting different numbers. My computer is 3 years old. And I'm wondering,
did the modem come with the computer originally, or did you add it yourself?
No, I bought this computer, everything on it, so I don't even have a CD to do anything.
Okay, if you go to the Dell support website, they have a section where you type in your asset tag.
Yeah.
There's a 6 or 8 digit number, and then that should take you exactly to the specific driver list you need.
But that's probably the old driver, and since
it should be the new
one. Why don't I let her talk?
Yeah.
There's 4 drivers in there, and I still don't know which one because...
Well, that's part of your problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You may have to take the computer apart and look at what the modem says on it, which is annoying, and I wish companies would stop doing that.
You can go in, and they give me my modem. Which
Jerry, the thing
with.
Is,
right.
What I think it is, though, and again, this is just my opinion, they're just trying to blow her off.
Yeah.
And what I think, you might want to look into, and you've said this before, Nick, is the actual phone line. You could have noise on the phone line that you might not be hearing, or it's very faint, and it's causing it to drop. Because a modem, what it's doing is sending packets. You send a packet to download something, it's got to send it back to you. And, you know, it's constantly this handshaking back and forth with the packet. Now, if you've got noise on the line...
No, I don't.
Well,
I didn't have this problem with my old carrier dial-up either.
No, this is just the phone company, not your carrier, not your service provider.
You didn't have this problem with the old carrier.
No.
Now, when you say carrier, do you mean your telephone company or your internet company?
No, I had, can I say the name of who I had?
Sure.
I had People PC, and then I went to the local net, okay, now, and it bleeps me out, page cannot be found, I keep getting disconnections and this and that.
It sounds to me like the ISP.
She might have some people PC settings still left in the computer.
Right.
Yeah. And if she's still using, like, with some of the carriers, since she changed providers, if she's using that WIN mode, the old-fashioned software modem in those Dells, they're junk.
Yeah.
They don't work
with
all service
providers. You may need to take them into a shop and have them check all your settings.
Yeah, have them check your settings, and that's really where that stands. You may have some stuff left from the old people PC. They do load their own sets of drivers. Got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Larry Dugan.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. All right, kiddies.
Well, hang on a second. Let's, for our previous caller, yes. one thing. If you're seeing four separate modem drivers when you go into my computer hardware manager, we'd suggest delete them all. Reboot the machine and let it reinstall just one.
Yes.
Maybe that's part of the problem. It doesn't know which one to use.
Right, and also look in your programs and see if you still have some people PC in there. And if you do,
uninstall that.
Yeah. All right, kiddies, grab your footy jammies, grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit in Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, and if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
You know what? I'm getting tired of being blamed for crap that other people do. And what I'm talking about is those idiots. Now, we've told a number of folks, if you get the ad that says, oh, your machine is infected and you got to pay $19.95 or $29.95 on there to get it off, we've told you, don't do it. So if you spend the money to do it, I can't feel sorry for you. But don't come in and insult me and say, oh, yeah, you computer guys must be behind this just so you can make money. No, I got a lot of better things that I could be doing with my time than removing their crap. And it's just what it is. It's a scam for them to make money.
Yeah, don't click on links.
It's just like the emails we tell you to do it in the no preview pane because they can infect your machine. And the minute you sit there and click on it, they know they've got a live one. They put that virus or Trojan on your machine, and they're the ones that are turning around and saying, yeah, you've got to pay them $19.95 or $29.95 to get it off.
If
you know
lucky,
how much money they're making?
Yeah, if you're lucky, they just steal your $20. Most of the time, they load more stuff to steal even more.
Well, most of the time, it doesn't even get rid of it. It's still on there.
And sometimes it's just scareware. It's a message that says, give us $20 and does nothing.
And it just loads it up, and you just get that junk on there. But like you say, the audacity of folks to come in, and here, I'm trying to help them, and they sit there and say, well, you folks probably put it on there, or a bunch of you guys out there got nothing better to do is go dream up that stuff. Yes, I've got a lot better stuff to do, and I don't need to be infecting machines, and if I got caught doing that, I'd be in jail.
Right.
Especially here in the U.S.
We actually got, on the Mac side, we got our first specific targeted piece of scareware. This thing comes up and says, at Mac Sweeper, you're infected, and click here. And it looks like a Mac window a little bit and targeting Mac users.
Well, on most of the PCs, on the PC side, they'll sit there and do a screen and it just changes their background. And it says, yes, your machine is infected and blah, 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 blah. Because that's the whole part of the Trojan. It goes behind the screen, changes your background.
All right, kitty.
Don't click on it.
It's time to rinse out your hot cocoa mugs, get your footy jammies off. If we can manage to jab that tranquilizer needle into them, it's time to put Uncle Dave away for another week. We'll be back next time with a lot more Uncle Dave. Rob, can we have a room in Second Life that has a rocking chair, mugs of hot cocoa, and if you can manage it, padded walls?
The padded wall is definitely the easy part, and that's probably essential from what I'm hearing. I could even probably get a rocking chair that'll rock him to sleep just without he doesn't have to move.
We'll
do it automatically for you guys.
And let people sit Indian style around.
Exactly.
I love this idea. All right, we
rock and rant.
Rock and rant. Uncle Dave's rock and rant room. Excellent. I love it. We're going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Robert Kale, Larry Dugan, whoever the hell that is in the bathroom. All right. Rob, the great Rob Linton.
He loves us.
Who has been very patient with us as we swing mics around and do all this other stuff today. Very nice of him. With me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. It is 58 minutes after the hour. When we come back, We will have a lot more of your phone calls. Remember, we have an expert in Second Life, and you people aren't taking advantage of it. Disgusting. I tell you right now, it's disgusting. We'll have more news, more views, more stuff you can use when we come back. Again, it's 58 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. Stay with me, everybody. Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm David.
I'm Steve Ray.
Larry Dugan.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites.
We should mention our guests again. Folks that might be tuning in from the church front.
That's right. We have with us Larry Dugan, who is some big noise somewhere in Finger Lakes Community College. You want me to actually give you your title. Your title is Director of Online Learning, Director of Online Distance Learning Environment.
For New York State,
for the entire state of New York.
Entire state of-
and we have cool. you here in our studio.
Isn't that amazing?
Let me ask you about my taxes.
let me ask you about your taxes.
Yeah.
Learn more.
Larry has graciously consented to give us some space in Second Life on one of their islands, and his minion Rob has, Rob Kale has graciously been forced into building us a house. So far, we're going to have a security tango floor and a soundbites floor, a floor for techsmart.org. We're going to have a room. We're going to have the Uncle Dave's rubber rant room or whatever we called it.
We can't even give Robert hair, gray hair. He doesn't have any.
He doesn't have any hair. He's shaved it all off. So that
he's already prepared for us.
He's like the only guy I know who has hair and shaved it off. Everybody else I know looks like me and shaved it off. And I think we're going to need a Dolores room. I've been thinking about this as well. Dolores is one of our people. She answers more questions faster and more completely than all the rest of us put together. I'm thinking of just renaming it AskDolores.com and retiring. But she really needs her own room so that she can answer everybody's questions for real. Well, we'll talk to you about what we can put in the place at some later point. So if you've got a Second Life question, he is your guy. Larry Dugan is here to do that for you. Before we go any farther, let's talk a little bit about what happens at our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis, like us to remind you. Every week, we do a poll. Last week's poll was about the place from which you buy your music. 244 of you voted, making it number 289 in the all-time hit list. Thanks to each and every one of you. Not surprisingly, the choices, of course, were iTunes, Walmart, a regular music store, and Buy Music. How quaint. And not surprisingly, Buy Music, How Quaint was the number one answer. So it surprised me that it was only 41%. 25% of you buy it from a regular music store, 24% of you buy it from iTunes, and only 10% of you buy from Walmart. This week's poll comes from an article talking about the price of Blu-ray players. As HD-DVD has faded away, the prices of Blu-ray disc, or BD devices, has begun to slowly creep up. Now, there's a surprise. To where they now largely rest at around $400. And the big question is if changes in the price change the demand for the product. It seems that while consumers have been stepping up to buy players for around $350, many appear to be deterred from spending much more than that. Players are more expensive now than when we had the competition of HD-DVD. Price leadership was really the only thing HD-DVD had going forward at the time, and Blu-ray manufacturers and some retailers were aggressively trying to nullify that point by bringing down BD prices. Sony, Sharps, and Panasonic's Blu-ray disc offerings are all at or around a new price high for 2008. LG's combo player was dropping in price, but over the past week, it's been climbing back up again. The overall increase in Blu-ray prices has been happening for a while now. And one question is whether or not this would be a burden on that format or whether it would cause early Blu-ray victory to crumble. It seems from available data that people are willing to buy like mad when the price point for a Sony is around $350. If it gets any higher than $400, that activity drops off sharply. Of course, Blu-ray needs to migrate into the mass consumer market, and for that to happen, we need to see prices come down, way down. I like the idea of putting 50 gigabytes of data on a Blu-ray double-sided double-density disc, double-layer, rather. You don't like that idea?
Yeah.
No, I don't think it's going to be a format that lasts too terribly long. When you've got Apple TV and everybody else downloading...
from the internet standard definition discs are good enough.
Well, but that's my point. The ability to put 50 gigabytes of data on one of those
as a backup or
whatever. Like, I love that idea. But as far as watching Blu-ray movies...
Although with a Blu-ray player and a good Blu-ray disc on a good HD television, it is significantly better.
Of which I have... none of those.
Right.
Actually, I have a good HD television, but that's about it.
Yeah. So in the next few years, as we see more and more people switching, especially next year when all the misinformation people are getting about next year, February 17, 2009, analog broadcast television stops. So if you're using rabbit ears to watch TV 8, 10, 13, etc., that will stop working, and you have to get a digital tuner. A lot of the cable companies around town, around the country, even a lot of the stores are saying that you have to buy this big, expensive digital television now. You don't. You just need a $30, $40 digital tuner that you can buy at Circuit City, Walmart, everywhere now.
Right.
But as more and more people get into those high definition televisions, in the next few years, we may see a bigger penetration. Sears, right now.
Sears and all them just got nailed this past week for still selling analog TVs and not informing people that they were.
Right. You're going to need a digital tuner.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Right now, the best way to get a Blu-ray player is the $400 PlayStation 3.
Right.
For $400, you get a really good upgradable Blu-ray player and a full game machine.
Right.
Too bad there aren't that many good games for PlayStation 3 yet.
Well, yeah, exactly. So anyway, the poll, to get back to the poll, the question is how much would you pay for a Blu-ray player? And I give you several price points from $400 down to $200. And, of course, you can also leave an opinion. So far, we've had, 80-some-odd people, 87 people do this. Most of them have decided to leave an opinion, which... I give you the opportunity to do because I know that simply pushing a button is not enough for you people. You want to be able to say more. So if you look at the little yellow box underneath the poll, you'll see a link that says, give us your opinion. If you click on that link, it takes you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Thank you, pardon.
Cool.
And you can leave an opinion, which many people have done so far. Most of them saying they want the Blu-ray players, they want people to pay them to get a Blu-ray player.
Well, and the thing is, over time, every price drops. I remember paying $600 for my Super VHS player.
Yep.
And then a couple years later, had to pay $100 to get the power supply rebuilt. I remember the first DVD players were $1,000. And now they're almost free in a cereal box. We got one for our bedroom, $20 at Sears.
Yeah, I have a friend who has a display behind his desk. He's an accountant. And it has every calculator he ever bought. And every single one of them cost $400. The first one had four functions. The next one added like square root or something. And of course, now you know, if you're going to spend $400, you're getting a whole computer, not just a calculator. But for years, he kept that up until he couldn't buy a $400. I mean, they just didn't make $400 calculators. So
the prices will come down eventually. And it's us early adopters that want the best now that pay the most.
Right. Now, we've had an interesting off-air question, which is, Larry, would you please tell us how to get started in Second Life?
Oh, that's easy. Go right.
Yeah, I say that's easy. I say that's easy because I've done it 100 times.
Right. If you go to SecondLife.com, SecondLife.com has a huge gold button, kind of like the one they have on Woot, that says, click here to log in. Our new user, our first-time user, I think it says. If you click on that, they'll take you through step-by-step how to get going in Second Life. But one of the problems you have when you get into Second Life is, okay, what do I do now? What it does is take you to someplace called Orientation Island. Orientation Island is...
So wait, you download a piece of software.
Right, you download the client.
Specific to your machine, and then you run that.
Right. And you have to create your account, I'm sorry. And those accounts are free. Right. As long as, if you want to own land in Second Life, sounds so silly.
Yeah.
If you want to own land in Second Life, you actually have to have an account.
Which is $10 a month.
Exactly. But if you don't want to, it's perfectly fine to go in there and have a free account. And all of my students and everybody else that takes their classes in Second Life, I'll have free accounts.
So when we have our little Second Life Island and we do stuff in Second Life, have an event or whatever we're having, and people want to come to it, it is free for them to do that.
Absolutely.
All right, go ahead. You do want broadband.
You
really don't want to be doing Second Life on dial-up.
Yeah, it really is almost impossible to do on dial-up. There are some other things.
You'll the maintenance also run... is done, and I can log back in now.
Yes, I saw that. you'll also have. You also want to make sure that you have a computer with a halfway decent video card in it. If you've got a computer, if you've got a 486, and you're trying to do it on that, even right. if you have broadband, it's right. not going to work.
Even high-end laptops that don't have good video cards have trouble. So you really want to pay attention on the main Second Life page. Maybe it's not there, but there's somewhere that talks about what the specifications are for the computers, you know, what video card you should have and how fast it should be and how much RAM you should have. You really do want to pay attention to that.
Although I'm running it now and you're too on a MacBook with shared video memory. It's okay.
Yeah, it's not bad. You know where you run into the most problems, though, is if you want to run Second Life with, like I said, the 486 or Invista.
Yeah.
why am I not surprised?
Exactly.
If you're using Vista, what happens is you've really got to make sure you get update the video drivers to the latest Vista model, or it will not work.
Yeah.
That's most of the problems I have is with students trying to get in using Vista, and we've got to show them how to update their video because it won't work if you do. But when you get in there, once you finally create your account, and Second Life limits the number of last names you can have to their choice.
Right, you pick the last name. No, the last name's a list, but the first name you can pick anything you want.
Right, well, unless it's
within reason.
Right. once you're in there, they take you to this orientation island, which is something you want to get off as quickly as possible. My recommendation is to actually, once you're on Orientation Island, search for something like, there's a little search button at the bottom of your client that you have for Second Life. Search for, well, I would of course like to see search for Finger Lakes Island,
right.
Because Finger Lakes Island is a pretty safe place. That will get you into Second Life, away from the massive throngs that are coming in at any given time. All right, let's just look at the Second Life. There's 60,000 people on Second Life right now.
Right.
And you want to get into a safer area. Once you're there, take the time to explore. Take the time to look around. And I tell you, the first time I was in Second Life, I ended up in the mainland. And this is kind of what inspired me for it. Is I was walking around, you know, not knowing what I was doing. Some strange person walked up to me in this long black coat with bald. And she was bald. And we started talking a little bit about education. I said, are you in education? She goes, well, yeah, I'm the dean at Cornell. I said, okay, there's got to be something to this.
Yeah, right.
And ever since then, I've been involved in that. So, but for those of you that want to come in, it's a free thing. You don't have to pay. There's a lot of great things. But again, Second Life is an internet-based product. Second Life has everything that you hear about negative about the internet as well as all the good stuff. You'll see, although they did just get rid of gambling.
Right.
Gambling was outlawed in Second Life, but everything else that you could run into. So you want to be just as safe and use the same kind of thoughts you talk about in your security tango, with Second Life.
Yeah.
And there are URLs you can click on in Second Life because it really is a three-dimensional web. And those things are, there's some things that can take you to some bad places.
Right. And you just got to be careful. The places that say mature often truly are.
Absolutely.
Not all of them, but some of them truly are.
Yep.
One of my favorite parts recently of Second Life has been the whole Literature Live thing that you're involved in. They're recreating literature online. For example, you guys are now recreating the Spoon River Anthology. The whole Dante's Inferno. There's all seven levels of hell. How cool is that? There's some neat stuff. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole bunch of people, and I'm not going to bother naming at the moment. It is 20 minutes after the hour. We're Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Larry Dugan.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, it's Sound Bites. Hey, it seems that the Brainiacs at Intel have been reading one too many comic books lately, as they have just announced heroic plans to protect humanity from the dangers of cosmic rays. Yes, cosmic rays. The company says it is developing on-chip cosmic ray detectors, which will be able to counter the evil effects of the space particles before you turn orange and rocky. Cosmic rays are actually not really rays at all, just plain old energetic particles from outer space that occasionally feel the urge to come tearing through the Earth's atmosphere to cause random chaos. About 90% of them are protons, but another 9% are helium nuclei. Or alpha particles, as is easier to say, or about 1% of them are electrons, or also called beta minus particles. They tend to be fairly innocuous, quiet little particles on the whole, but Intel thinks otherwise, basically because semiconductors rely on charged particles, unexpected ray hits could disrupt systems and cause them to crash. Apparently in quite boring anticlimactic fashion, as opposed to the bright flashes of white light and fluorescent orange mushroom clouds one has come to expect from sci-fi cosmic ray. According to Intel superhero, senior scientist Eric Hanna, if a cosmic ray causes a collision inside the chip, that releases a lot of charged particles. Scary stuff indeed. Admittedly, the cosmic rays wouldn't cause too much hassle for just one lone computer with a single chip, but they could end up being problematic for supercomputers with 10,000 chips, potentially causing 10 to 20 faults a week. Also, purportedly, as chips get smaller and smaller, the risk of them being interfered with by malicious cosmic rays increases due to the fact that their circuits need less charge per switch to run. So, of course, the ray detector is still some way off and is only really in the discussion phase, but Intel says it will press on and build one in the near future. After all, saving the world could mean big business. Dr. Doom, you are on warning. All right. Very exciting. Our next caller is Cindy from Greece, New York. Welcome, Cindy. What's your question?
Hi, I've got a problem with my computer not booting up. What I did is I updated my firmware for a light-on DVD-RW.
Mm-hmm.
And I did this so I could back up my system, of course.
Okay.
Using Roxio Creator 10.
Okay.
And it rebooted, and on reboot I have a message, a disk read error occurred, press Control-Alt-Delete to restart. I keep doing that, keep getting the same message. However, if I hold down Control-Alt-Delete, it opens up the BIOS. And I don't know if I should, like, take the DVD writer out of the BIOS.
Cindy, is there any way, can you hit, like, F12 to get, like, a boot menu selection? Some machines allow you to hit F12, and you can select what machine, what device it's going to boot off of.
Yeah, maybe trying to boot that DVD, and if you don't have a boot disk in it, there's
your
disk error.
More importantly, let me suggest you look in the DVD and see if there is a disk in there.
No, they told me, the machine told me to remove any disk.
Yeah, that's correct.
That I had in the DVD, close everything out, and then reboot the system. So that it could update the firmware.
Yeah.
And as soon as I did that, I got this disk read error.
Because I think it's now confused, and I think it's trying to still boot off of the DVD, and it's lost the information to, first boot from the hard drive.
If you're lucky. It could be the main hard drive has failed.
No DVD to boot from. It didn't tell me to boot from
Right. Here's one thing, though, Cindy. What you can do is, what type of machine do you have?
It's one Toyota made for me.
When it's booting, hit the delete key.
Then that's what you're doing. When you hold that Control-Alt-Delete and gets into BIOS, it's probably just the delete key gets you into BIOS.
In the BIOS, yes. You're going to be going through, and depending on the screens, it's hard to tell. But what you're going to look for is on one of those screens, it's going to say boot order. And what
Should
you want to do?
Should I go into the BIOS?
Huh?
Should I go into the BIOS?
Yes. In the BIOS, you're going to get a blue screen. It's going to be divided in half. Now, on one of those screens, because I don't know what brand of BIOS that you're using.
All right, I'm at the boot screen right now.
But what you're going to be doing is looking for a screen that's going to say boot order. And what you're going to do is look for that in that boot order, whether it first goes to the CD-ROM drive or DVD, then the hard drive. Well, you're going to want to switch those two, that it boots right from the hard drive. A lot of computers, because I think the firmware update might have gotten messed up, that it's trying to boot now from that and not even looking for your hard drive.
All right. Well, I just went to the boot device priority.
Mm-hmm.
And it says first boot device is a DVD ROM.
Yeah. Select that
other one.
Select that and see if you can get it to go to the hard drive first.
Okay. Second boot is a PMST3200 822A. I don't know what that is.
You have two optical drives in your computer?
Do I have two hard drives?
No, two optical drives. You said the DVD-ROM was your other one.
Yes, I do. I have a DVD-ROM and a DVD-Writer.
Yeah.
And then what's the third?
The third thing says, third boot device, it says first floppy drive.
What's the fourth?
There isn't a fourth.
See, oh, so there's the problem. It's not even looking for your hard drive to boot from.
Yeah.
It's looking at the first optical drive, the second optical drive, then your floppy drive.
See if you can go on the very first one and see, like, it's F5 or F6 on some of them to change it.
There should be a change boot order.
So you come down to that first boot device, F5 or F6, whichever it is to change it. It'll say at the bottom of your screen. And you select that and see on that list if there's a listing there for the hard drive zero.
All right, let's see. I have hard disk drives on boot.
Yeah, that could be it. Every BIOS names it slightly different.
Yeah.
So what's happened is the computer's been told to ignore the hard drive and boot only from the optical drive. And since you don't have a boot disk in your optical drive, it can't boot, and that's your error.
And it's gotten confused. So, yeah you got to get there and get it changed so it will boot from the hard drive. It's not easy. You know, it's easy for me to explain it, but depending on what BIOS screen that you've got, you know, I can't really talk you through it.
Yeah, so
that's what that's where the main problem is, and that's what you're trying to achieve. If they have an issue,
if it has a fourth boot order, then you can put your hard drive in there, because it's sometimes good to have that optical drive first, and when you want to boot from an optical drive. But
yeah, but usually that's
your
the
hard
first
drive
one,
first
and
now.
Then your second one is usually your hard drive.
Yeah,
but it's lost all recognition. Sorry, that's the best we can do for you. Then, you know, like I say, if you run an issue, you got to take it to somebody that can actually straighten it out. And, you know, it only takes a few minutes to do something like that. All right?
All right.
Next
sorry,
call.
I
was flying over the island in an unchecked fly, and I fell, and my arms were wailing and flying around, and I smacked on the sidewalk. And
you know, if someone just tuned in, they will have no idea what you are talking about.
No, they think it's normal for Steve. It's Steve. Hey,
Steve. Yeah, it's Steve. There's no question there.
Or Rob, yes, they'd be, you know, wonder what the heck about. Steve, they go, oh, he's normal.
They'll be walking down Main Street trying to look at the
My
slide.
My problem, of course, is I'm looking around in Second Life. I was just said hi to somebody, and all of a sudden I got to be back here, so I don't even know who that is or what we're talking about. Our next caller is Vito from Shiloh. Vito, how are you?
Thank you very much for taking my call. Ever since I downloaded Firefox 2.0.0.13, the system starts to crash. It gives messages like Firefox has encountered a problem, has to close. Firefox is already running but not responding. So the downside is I have to go to the task manager, take out the EXE for Firefox out of there and go again, but it just comes back. And others have reported about this in Google and the Firefox Mozilla forum for Firefox. So I'm at a loss how to correct this. One suggestion is go back to the previous version.
Right.
So for that, they tell you to go to the FTP server. So if you can't conclude anything for me to do here, would you put that on your website, how to do that, so I can go back to the previous version? I don't know how to do it with the FTP server.
All right. We'll look up the instructions and post them in the links. Be happy to do that. Yeah, some people are encountering problems with Firefox 2.0.0.13, and they're suggesting you go back to 9 or 7 or one of those. And so they will have instructions on their website. Steve is desperately looking for a link, and we'll get that posted as soon as we can. Thanks. Well, I love Firefox, but they seem to have screwed up this latest.
We'll give them one. I mean, compared to Microsoft's.
Yeah, exactly. All right, our next caller is Scott from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Scott. What's your question?
I'll try to make this quick, guys. I got a friend, had XP Home, had an issue with it. I wasn't there. I didn't see the issue. Her friend brought over Pro to put in. She couldn't find her original disk.
Ouch.
She updated Pro recently. They wanted her to validate her Windows copy. She must have put in something not right. We couldn't validate it.
Because she's trying to upgrade, unless she had the key code.
Right. The key he used is not working now to validate Windows.
Right, because it's a home key that's probably sitting on the side of her machine, and if she didn't have a legit XP, and she did an upgrade to XP Pro, doesn't have the license, she's going to get bonked.
Right, so this is what we did. We talked to Dell. We got a copy of the original disk. I reinstalled Home.
Mm-hmm.
It said you can't upgrade to Home from Pro.
Right, you've got to wipe the whole hard. You've got to format the hard drive.
Right now, so they're both in there, I believe. I have Pro and Home in there at once. When I boot, it says, "Do you want to start Home or Pro?" I got it to start Home. went to the boot menu, so that menu doesn't come up anymore, but I still think I have both of them on there.
Yeah, I would format.
How do I get rid of that? That's what I
need. Format the whole hard drive.
Okay.
Is that a simple thing to do? Yes, F disk it and start fresh. In other words, if you put the home CD in and boot it up, one of the options when you're installing it is to format the hard drive or delete the partition and start fresh. It'll delete it, format it, and then install home fresh. So you'll be starting right from square one.
Make sure you back up all your data first, because that is going to erase everything on the hard drive.
Yes.
And strange that Microsoft doesn't let you downgrade from pro to home.
Yeah, well, that's
a whole other show.
Yeah.
We don't even want to go there.
That was my ironic wink, wink, nudge, nudge voice.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Your Linux keeps getting easier and easier to use, and Microsoft Windows keeps getting harder and harder to use. Where do they think this market is going?
It's called job security for me.
Well, I'll tell you, I missed the fact.
We don't have to put backdoors and viruses on the Internet. Microsoft is doing that for us.
All opinions expressed on this show
are Steve Ray's.
And
REA.
And not that of the station, the management, or any right-thinking human being. One of the things that I do love about Linux is the fact that everything updates automatically. One of the things I dislike is that it's still a third-class citizen in a lot of places. For example, in Second Life, I have a laptop which has an Intel graphics card on it. It works in Windows. Second Life works in Windows, but it does not work in Linux because they have not yet written a driver, their own driver, for that. On the other hand, my machine at home, my Linux machine at home, is a very high-end NVIDIA graphics card, and it is the cleanest, clearest, fastest signal I ever get from Second Life anywhere. It's got a whole lot more detail, and it's very nice. Of course, that's not important when I'm in the Soundbites chat on IRC. That's all text, and everybody just gets to do whatever they want to do, and that works out because it's just text. And we still have lots of people doing that, and honestly, for many people, that's a lot easier to get into than Second Life. Particularly on older machines, you know, if I'm carrying an old laptop around, I can certainly do RIC, and I can't do Second Life. But, you know, as I say a million times, the price of poker keeps going up. And the really nice thing about Second Life is that you can express yourself better with your own avatar. And, of course, when the island is built, or if you want to go off somewhere, you can form smaller groups that can chat about things that are important to you without everybody else hearing what you're saying, which would happen on the main channel and an IRC anyway. All right, our next caller is Bridget from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Bridget. What's your question?
Hi. You were talking about Blu-ray discs for PlayStation.
Yes.
Is there any upgrade or something for Xbox 360?
Microsoft was one of the big backers of HD DVD. It was Microsoft and Toshiba against pretty much everybody else. And so Microsoft had an HD DVD player for the Xbox 360. Mm-hmm. They have since discontinued that, so they're probably $10 on the internet. So that's a good way to get an HD DVD player now. Microsoft has said they're not going to make a Blu-ray player for the Xbox 360. They may later, but they're probably still, you know, smarting over the fact that they lost in the format wars. So at this point, no, not for the Xbox 360. It just has a standard DVD player in it.
And do you know about anything about, like, the Wii, any kind of DVD thing for the Wii?
Well, the Wii has a standard DVD player in it also, so I don't think they have any add-on for HD or Blu-ray.
No, not yet. Not that I know of. On the other hand, I think you should get your father to buy you one of every single console out there so you can test this for yourself.
Yeah.
We have to take a break back in just a couple of minutes.
Cha-ching.
With Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob, sorry, Rob Kale, Larry, I'm going to be so poor, Dugan, Chris Wright, Rob,
there goes our island.
When you're 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Larry Dugan.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we go back to the phone, very quickly, for those of you who are into MySQL, you should know that there's a big upgrade coming next week. MySQL developers should be able to get their hands on a major update to the open source database next week when Sun Microsystems, which just recently bought MySQL AB, hosts the first MySQL conference since the company acquired them earlier this year. Sun will use the event in Santa Clara, California to release MySQL 5.1, an upgrade that adds several new features to make the database more suitable for critical applications at large enterprises. Not that large enterprises like, oh, what's one of the smaller ones? Google doesn't use it all day long. So I don't know that, you know, how much larger you can get than Google, but okay. 5.1 has some pretty major features, says the vice president for MySQL products at Sun. Probably we should have called it 6.0 because there's so much stuff in there. We've been working on it for a couple of years. They're going to have partitioning, event scheduling, row-based replication, disk-based clustering. Those are standard features already offered by rivals IBM, Oracle, and Microsoft, but they should help MySQL compete in environments where performance and the ability to scale are critical. And they fixed a lot of the outstanding bugs in 5.0. And those of us who have used it know there were certainly a lot of them. They're also working on a couple of new transactional engines, one called Falcon and one called Maria. It looks like Maria is being backed by Michael Wadenius, who was one of the original developers of MySQL, but it looks like Sun is backing Falcon. It doesn't matter to us which one they use. They're both going to be phenomenal. And for those of you who are database geeks, that's something to just pant for. We're back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I'm having a problem with the encryption key, failing to, I guess, retain the encryption key. So I have a inability to connect to the internet, and it always goes back to me having to rekey in the encryption key.
Encryption key for what?
For the network, my home network.
For your
Your wireless?
Yeah.
Your laptop?
Yes.
Yeah, what... How did you set it up? Are you using WPA or WPA2?
It's WEP.
WEP. And are you broadcasting the SSID, or are you hiding that?
Broadcasting it.
Well, that was entirely the wrong answer.
Well, to back up half a step.
What's wrong with these people who call
WEP?
Yeah.
WEP can be cracked in less than 30 seconds. It is not secure. It is not encrypted. Don't bother using it.
Right.
Okay.
However, there are, that said, some older machines cannot do more than WEP, and some older wireless routers can't do more than WEP. That was the wireless encryption protocol, which really kind of wasn't.
Okay.
Well, it was wireless. It wasn't a good encryption protocol. WPA is better.
I have one a Windows 2000 professional machine and one XP machine.
Yeah, the Windows 2000 isn't going to do much more than WEP to begin with.
Okay.
I think it
resolved the problem for a period of time anyways when I went from, I guess, the 56 to the 128 and then stopped having XP fight for the card control with the Belkin wireless card.
Right.
So I turned off the Belkin and it seemed to work. And then I went and installed System Mechanics, a suite of programs. And I don't know if I've, you know, cleared out the private cache and so forth, if that's what's...
Well, if you've got System Mechanic, not one of my favorite programs.
Yeah.
But if you've got System Mechanic set to continually wipe out the private cache, then yes, you're going to lose it every time. One of the do you turn your machine off every night?
Yes.
Do me a favor. Leave it on overnight and see if you still have it in the morning.
Okay.
If you do, that means that you've got System Mechanic set to wipe out that cache every time you turn the machine off.
Okay.
And that, of course, would mean in the next day when you turn it on again, you would have that problem of having to put it back in again.
Okay. So would that be the firewall application is really what drives that, or?
No, it's that section that's clear that there's the private cache, the private data, I think it's called. I don't use System Mechanic much anymore, so I don't remember exactly what it's called. But it's essentially where all your private data are kept. And if you keep clearing that out every night when you turn the machine off, then you're going to lose all of those things and have to put them all in again. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Wright, Robert Kale, Larry Dugan, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, 48 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
I'm Larry Dugan.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, we're having fun in Second Life during the, we always have fun in the IRC chat, but today we're having fun in Second Life. I like your hat.
Yeah.
Very nice hat. All right, back to the phones immediately. Our next caller is Terry from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Terry. What's your question?
Hi. Recently, and it's been occurring more frequently, my account, my settings on the computer, my desktop, my theme, my colors, my appearance, even the pointer, every time I turn on the computer, when I turn on the computer, they've all reverted back to the Windows XP default settings. And I can't figure out why it's doing that, because I have to reset them all over again.
Now, have you done any of the... what service pack? Are you on service pack 2?
I'm up to date. In fact, it updated everything within the last week.
Right. And you, what antivirus program are you running?
Norton.
And what anti-spyware program?
Anti-spyware...
Because it sounds like you've been hacked as far as a Trojan, that it keeps reverting your stuff back to the defaults.
It could be a permission issue. Are you the admin user or a standard user?
No, I'm the admin user.
So that should let you keep those settings.
But
unless your profile is corrupted, it can be common for profiles to get corrupted like that.
Try creating another user and see if make some changes and see if it keeps those.
Okay, well, how would I go about doing that?
You just go into the control panel, and under users, you can click there and add another user.
Okay.
And then when you boot up the machine, it's going to show your original name and this new name. And you can select a new name, go into there, make some changes, log off, or shut it down, bring it back up. Again, select that new user and see if the changes stay in effect. If they do, then you're going to have, then it gets into a little more issue and we'll have to address that. But first try that, because then there's copying the desktops from one identity over to the other. And I can walk you through that later. But first, see if that'll correct it.
Yeah, wasn't there who knows? Wasn't there a tool that used to attempt to fix profile damage?
Yeah, I think it caused more than ever.
Yeah.
I've been reminded that I am remiss. When I speak on the air, sometimes things roll out of my mouth that I have no idea what they are. I do try to keep that sensor in the back of my head going to keep me from swearing, but somehow I seem to have said there were 7 levels of hell when there are, in fact, 9. I actually knew that. I've read Dante's Inferno.
And the person who actually built hell in Second Life texted me in Second Life and said, would you please tell them there are actually 9 levels?
Yes, I do. I apologize to everyone.
That's for you.
Well, now the Futurama,
more and more often.
And then the Futurama episode where Bender goes to hell and the robot devil sings this great little song about all the 9 levels of hell.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. All right, our next caller is, we have an off-air question about how to make money in Second Life.
Oh, what a wonderful question.
It is a good question.
That's actually, I was started off making money on Second Life. I was teaching a course in e-commerce at Finger Lakes and heard about people that were making some cash in Second Life. And so I started buying and selling land, virtual land, which to me was still outrageous.
Right.
I was buying it for like 7 lindens a meter and selling it for 14 to 18 lindens a meter and making a killing in Second Life. I was making $500-$600 a week. In Second Life, and then
in Second Life dollars.
No, in
wow.
real life dollars.
Wow.
It didn't last very long because then Second Life, the people who owned Second Life, saw that the land inflation was going so badly that they took control, and of course the laws of supply and demand kicked in.
Right.
And it was almost impossible to make as much money anymore on land. But there are still people doing it. There's still people making a lot of money selling land, selling clothes, and
selling other things.
There's that.
But you have to be an actual premium or paid member. So you have to spend the $10 a month to have the privilege of making money in Second Life.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, the whole money thing in Second Life was just the topic of conversation last week on the House floor. They're doing an an education on what this whole virtual world is going to be. And a lot of people from Second Life testified right up on the House floor. And in fact, it was a nice little plug on The Daily Show.
Yeah,
we scammed it. It was hysterical. But the...
you know, they're concerned about people laundering money in Second Life and terrorists in Second Life and all these other things that Second Life could be used for. It's not.
The last time I looked, which was earlier this week, it was 287 Linden dollars to an American dollar.
That's right.
So you have to make 280. I mean, who's going to make those kind of... I mean, there are some people making a real living in Second
Life. Well, right now,
but they're few and far between.
Right.
I was saying that you can get 1,000 Linden dollars for $4.09.
Yeah.
Of a real dollar.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah.
But I remember a while ago there was a big controversy and investigations about people going into Second Life pretending to be children or pretending to be animals and then having sex. And is that illegal if they're pretending to be? And, you know, the whole concept of law in Second Life and what's legal in the real world and what's illegal in the real world versus legalities in Second Life. I've read about law schools that are having courses about it. And
there's actually lawyers practicing, Caldwell bankers, selling land. I mean, for goodness sake, it's huge.
Everything you can imagine and many things you couldn't. We've said that for years about the internet.
Things you really don't want to imagine. All right, we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I want to thank Rob Kale for not saying a word for 2 hours. I want to thank Larry Dugan for coming in here and telling us all about Second Life and especially for giving us our own island and all the wonderful things he's done for us and will continue to force Rob to do for us. I want to thank Chris Wright for again coming in here and giving of his expertise, his knowledge, and his time to make the brilliant and professional podcast that he makes. I want to thank Rob Linden for having Rob Linden, the Second Life with Phil Linden. Rob Linden, ladies and gentlemen, for waking up and actually coming in. I'm Nick Francesco. I'd like to thank all the folks in the IRC chat and in the Second Life itself. Thanks so much. We're done.